My name is Mario Yuzo Nieto. I go by Yuzo. It's my middle name. It's a Japanese name. Fourth generation Colorado on the Japanese side, and I'm mestizo on the Latino side, so Mescalero Apache and Spanish from Southwest. Yeah, the mestiaje is like really interesting, and I think something that we don't really talk about. Like, I've always been, you know, codified as being either Chinese or Mexican, and our divisions are so much more complex and infinite than that. So Radical Arts Academy, basically, I co-founded RAD as a response to like this sheer gap for opportunities for arts education for our youth, especially in areas of Denver that are the most historically excluded from these kind of educational opportunities. I built a music program at a charter school in far northeast Denver, at two different schools, and then taught fourth grade, and just felt like, yes, I was making like such a strong impact on students. I would take students even on tours. We'd do international tours, doing mostly like West African, like Guinea, Mali style percussion and dance. And we were getting like national awards and like awards from the mayor and stuff. And, you know, like after graduating from my programs as fifth graders, there's two choices. They could either try to go to Denver School of the Arts, and quite frankly, maybe 5% of my students who applied there would get in, and not knocking them, but somehow, let's just talk about it in terms of institutionalized preferences of arts of my students, or the backgrounds of my students, weren't preferred at this school, right? And so only a very small percentage would get in there. And the ones that wouldn't, like the only options they had were like cheerleading or sports. Like all of arts was just cut from any middle school or high school option that they had. And I had like kids that were going on tour as second graders, like being able to sing like modulating harmonies, like compose their own music. Just stop arts altogether after fifth grade, because there was just literally no option.
No way to continue this. Yeah. Tell me where you are right now, where we are, because it is super important what you're explaining to me happening in Denver and your experience of bringing arts to the young ones. And we are here in Chitauqua, in Boulder, when you normally come here and you listen to the most amazing artists, and we are celebrating Festival del Sol, and we have had, you know, these amazing Latino musicians coming today, occupying this space that normally is not occupied. And when you're speaking to me about what you have created and what you notice, you're making me think about what happens with the kids here in Boulder when they also take music classes. But what happens if they don't know how to read the notes, if they have not done all those extra classes that I know they must take? They are not accepted into continuing into those academies or those tracks that then they go to CU Boulder, and if they don't do that, they are not accepted. Institutionalized barrier.
Yes.
And something that is happening, and it is even hard to listen to this as I'm thinking, because as you know, our music is all over the world. Mm-hmm. We conquer with our music because of our mestizaje, because of the mix that we bring. Mm-hmm. La Latinidad.
Well, and let's just back up and acknowledge that we are on Ute land right now, right? And like the Colorado has these intersectionalities of Arapaho, Cheyenne, Shoshone, and these are also like colonizer names of these indigenous groups. So pardon me for not pronouncing the original names of these groups. The reason why folks aren't currently here, like Ute folks aren't here right now on this land that we're standing on, is because of that institutionalized colonization. Once we bring in like transatlantic slavery, which is just a whole nother level of genocide, you know, we have these intersectionalities, like you're saying, of people that are just, that have historically and still to this day been participants in this continued genocide from the Eurocentricity of the colonization of this land. However, if we look at history of, let's just say, music, of our like cultural assets from the United States, largely Black and indigenous print, you know, like cultural assets, like let's say just jazz, for instance, right? Jazz is, when it first came out, was like seen in the same way as hip hop was. It was like, basically like you're cussing over the mic. This is like lewd music. It's like leading to, you know, like our people getting raped or whatever like negative stereotypes you would have. And then all of a sudden, now it's like one of our greatest cultural assets. And guess what? If you go to the university, primarily who are teaching jazz? White men. So let's just let that sit for 1 second. And those are the ones who are upholding the system to say people who are not white are not good enough, are not musical enough to be deemed worthy of these jazz programs. But like jazz pedagogy really is like you go to someone's house, you listen to records, you jam out to some tunes, I show you this, you show me this. It's a very informal learning practice that ended up developing one of the most complex music theory systems that we have. Even if you look at like just like European music, I mean, like we had the Renaissance, right? And then someone like Mozart tried to break the rule, or no, Bach first. Bach was like breaking the rules, right? Broke the rules. And then we had these like Bach theory, which, you know, governs a lot of theory. We taught this dude up Mozart, right? Guess what Mozart did? He just broke the rules. He was like, I'm gonna add these chords and do these rhythms that you can't do. And then all of a sudden he's this genius, right? And then you have Beethoven, who, if you really research, probably black, broke the rules again. And then we had the Romantic. The Romantic period of classical music was the most complex as far as like the chords you could use, the progressions, the times, right? And that's inherently because one composer after another broke the rules. Yet nowadays, for some reason, we just uphold these old school traditions without really recognizing that music theory in itself is just a set of like guidelines to compose in a genre. But it doesn't make it more or less right unless you are trying to compose in a specific genre of classical. Yes, there's good things to be had from that, just like there's good things to be had from any musical tradition, right? So it was very contentious for me. So after I like was, you know, built these music programs in Denver and kind of found that I was plateauing in terms of like the level of impact that I could, that's when I took it upon myself to go back to school, get a doctorate in music education and educational leadership and policy studies, because I know that like I'm in this unique position where I can navigate both like the more traditional education system and even like arts education system and the more culturally responsive approaches that are not seen. So like my very existence too in grad school was seen as contentious because I felt like the rest of the professors around thought of me as trying to somehow discredit all of their academia. And really all I was trying to say, and all of my research and all of my, all of my writing that I've done academically is more to like just build upon what's already there. Like there's a hugely advanced concept of music theory that you don't even get to study until graduate level music theory. It's called metrical dissonance. So a lot of the time we'll know about like melodic or harmonic dissonance, where like you have two notes that are right next to each other that sound crunchy or like bad together, but then when you play like a full chord together, it sounds cool, right? Like jazz, like a lot of jazz chords. Same thing can happen with meter, right? And so like in graduate school, when they talk about metrical dissonance, they only talk about it from like Schumann or Beethoven or, and these are all like valid examples, but like if you really study like accordion through like norteño or like cumbia or like some of, like especially just like along like Central and South American like musical traditions, that accordionista is doing like the most complicated metrical dissonance you've ever heard. A prime example that most people know, La Chona, right? And I did like an entire academic research paper that was published in a music theory journal on metrical dissonances in música norteña. Because it's just like, I'm not trying to discredit anybody's research. I'm just saying, yes, you can talk about it from Schumann and Beethoven, and you can talk about it from Los Tucanes de Tijuana. And neither of them have to function in isolation. And just by bringing up the fact that musicians outside of the Eurocentric 16th to 18th century context have done this thing just elevates, you know, musical genius.
Where can people find out more about this new school that you're opening up? And how can people be participant or collaborate with you, especially those that are seeing that their kids or their people that, you know, are not getting, they're not having the same access as others
Yes.
to this kind of education and this understanding that will make them feel much better about who they are, where they come from?
That whole lecture was to say is like, it's not enough to me to just say that we offer the arts, because as many of us know, especially many of us folks of color or BIPOC individuals, is the arts themselves aren't necessarily designed for us as far as the educational system in this country so far. So that's, I think, what makes our arts radical. That's what we call it, Radical Arts Academy of Denver, is that we really centralize community and culturally responsive pedagogy within our arts model. And so always just leveraging the interests of our students, of our users, at the center of all of our curriculum. And that's, I think, just best practice in education in general. So we'll be ECE through eighth grade model, but we'll start in 2024 is when we're launching. It's in far northeast Denver, so kind of on your way to the airport off of Peña Boulevard. We will start with ECE first and second grade that year and build one grade level per year as we grow. So basically, if you have children or students who are in any way interested in the arts, and we're not kind of saying that like we're trying to sort of cultivate like professional artists necessarily, we're trying to leverage, so we're pioneering this concept called arts-based learning. And so it's kind of taking project-based learning and arts integration and molding them together, and so that students have opportunities to approach all academics through the arts. So if you want to demonstrate your math multiplication facts by writing a song, that's how, you know, that's seen as your assessment rather than like just a worksheet test kind of thing.
How can people find out more? Where can they go?
So for one, you can find us on our website. It's radicalartsacademy.org. You can find us on Instagram, again, at Radical Arts Academy, or on Facebook at Radical Arts Academy. If you have children, again, like around 3 to 5 years old, that's like the perfect age for when we launch in 2024. And you can also email me personally. It's rad, so R-A-A-D, at radicalartsacademy.org. And if you're interested in trying to enroll early before we open to just try to get in front of the gate, go to bit.ly/radicalarts, and it's all lowercase.
Final reflection, because as I am feeling here, it is a sacred place. Chautauqua, this area here in Boulder, is extremely sacred, and I'm so happy that you name First Nations, the lack of presence of them, and today that we're celebrating El Festival del Sol, bringing Latinos from the community, because we are here, aquí estamos y de aquí no nos vamos. Mm-hmm. We are experiencing the beauty of the música de los Molcochetes as you finish the Pink Hawks, beautiful music. What is your last message that you would like to give?
I just want to give, honestly, a shout out to folks like KGNU. And I'm not being, what do you call it? Like, I'm not just saying this. Like, literally, we've been a band since about 2007. And we were doing like things like Afrobeat and like just music from diverse cultures. Honestly, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but before a lot of other people were trying to do that in Colorado. And from the very get, KGNU was the only radio station that would actually play our stuff, that would host us up for cabaret, that would actually co-host concerts that we were having. Now all of a sudden, you know, we were able to kind of clear the path a little bit for
pioneers
like Mocochetes, like Roca Hueca, like And so it's beautiful to see a lot of these artists coming out of like the path that we had to clear. But just like Mocochetes with Machetes, like it was us and like KG and you was like the first fools to be like, yeah, Pink Hawks, we love you. You're like our kind of stuff. And so I just want to shout y'all out, and I want anyone listening to know like the sheer importance and just like how cutting edge, how progressive KG and you has always been.
Mario Yuso Nieto with Pink Hawks talking today here outside Chitacua Auditorium as Los Molcochetes are playing and finishing this Festival del Sol. For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo-Better. Thank you so much.